Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome back to the Organic Gardener Podcast, where we're talking with Kelly Ware today about what you would take with you if you're going to start a permaculture farm on a budget, maybe even in another part of the world. Kelly's moving to Panama, and so she's been talking about what she's going to take in her shipping container down there so her family and her can move and relocate and start an eco-wellness retreat center where you can study permaculture sustainability practices. So I hope you've enjoyed part one, and here's the end with part two of the rest of the list of things to take. And everything's listed in the show notes page if you need the links to anything.
So the other big area that we can get of things from Amazon that's really inexpensive for us is soil supplements. Or, for example, people down there have a real problem with bugs. And so diatomaceous earth is something that they mine, I guess, somewhere in the United States, but it's really inexpensive to order, especially if you have Amazon Prime free shipping. Then you can get a big bag of diatomaceous earth. And that is this crystalline, you know, substance that was from ancient diatoms that were fossilized. And so when a bug gets it on their skin, they dry out. Or if they eat it, they dry out. They get wrecked. So they said that I should bring down a bunch of bags of that because I could sell it because nobody has it down there.
Okay, can I ask you a question? Uh-huh. Have you tried eggshells instead of that diatomaceous earth?
No, because I'm allergic to eggs. That's why we're doing the duck eggs. So we don't really have as many eggshells. But I haven't used it, but I could try it. But I know the diatomaceous earth works perfect 100% for like carpenter ants. The other thing soil supplement wise is all of the mycorrhizae, the beneficial bacteria and fungi that you can order. I've been ordering, you know, five or six different strains. The mycological world is there to help us, and it needs our help because, you know, if we keep using pesticides on the earth, it's killing the mycorrhizae fungi in the soil. And the aspergillus fungi is a bad fungi. And when it doesn't have the competitory fungi or whatever, then, it thrives, and it's deadly to humans and animals. That's the fungi that was talked about, the end of the earth scenario in that movie Interstellar that just came out. But that is actually happening with aspergillus. And aspergillus is one of the molds that was really making my son sick. So, and you know, we've got big barley fields that have been sprayed with Roundup for years and years and years just west of us. So every time the wind blows, it picks all that up and dumps it right down on our house. So we can't live here in the city anymore. And I don't want to live in a city. I don't want to have, you know, the water systems and all the chlorine and everything, and just living on a street and, you know, only having a double lot to play with. I've really run out of room to plant things. I've got a fabulous home if you want to live in a town. But the other big, you know, thing that's really got a lot of different specialized tools that I would want to order is for aquaponics. So that is a system where you have a big fish tank and you get the water just right. So it's kind of high in fish ammonia. And there's a whole science behind that. I studied with Tim and Susan Friend of Friendly Aquaponics, and they have a whole thing online. If you just sign up for their newsletter and you read all their newsletters, you have the whole course in their newsletters, just saying. But the aquaponics stuff that you need, like certain pumps work best, or a certain amount of flow works best, or a certain amount of air bubbler is the best one. So I would want to order that kit of things I need. They have a certain kind of plastic that you line the beds with that would be probably better got here. There's a certain kind of a greenhouse plastic that works really great for areas with snow. That's this really important type that everybody's getting. And, you know, it's questionable whether I need it down there. I've got greenhouse plastic and 100-foot roll, so I have something to play with down there. I took my bender. So if I want to buy chain link steel down there, I could probably buy it down there. I'll have to see if that kind of thing's more expensive down there than up here. And I'm taking my bender with me, so I'd be able to set up hoop houses, which help you to mitigate the high winds that sometimes happen. You know, mm-hmm. we're right between two oceans, so you get wind sometimes, and you get a lot of rain, and you get those big storms. So if you're growing greens or something sensitive in an aquaponic system, then you want that protected. In fact, it was really interesting. This guy said that when Fukushima came out, everything that was outside of his hoop houses died, and everything inside really took a beating, but it didn't die. And so, you know, word to the wise, it might be a good way to mitigate some of the issues that we're having with our climate or with those other threats, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, because 97% of the toxins and the, well, I don't know about toxins, but the nuclear energy is all in the Northern Hemisphere. And then we're dealing with the whole issue of methane coming down out of the Arctic, and seeing the maps, you know, there's this whole movement of red coming down into the Northern climate. So I think anytime that you start growing aquaponics or under some sort of a cover, you're going to be able to really mitigate your risk factor to what's coming, what's here already and what's coming more so.
You don't hear many people talk about Fukushima, do you? But it's still leaking into the ocean.
Yeah, I just, to me, it's like, I'm like, when did anybody ever stop talking about it? Of course, in my circles, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm thinking, gosh, how come I don't hear about it anymore? And then I look it up and it's like, oh, it's worse than ever. And you know, and they're doing all this big cover up, and I'm like, how is it that everybody's buying all like the cover ups? I mean, anyway, so it's really important to just take these things into factor. And you know, somebody did a really great interview about it was Stephen Stephen Harris 123 or Solar 123 or all those. He gave a really great talk on the Expert Council a couple Fridays ago on the Survival podcast. And somebody said, is it dangerous to live right next to a nuclear place? And he's like, well, frankly, you know, unless there's a big problem, you know, people don't usually get toxic from living next to one. So, you know, it's just that, you know, I just wouldn't, energetically, I just couldn't. I couldn't live near one, but you know, I just think that there's enough things stacked against us that we could have some oopsies. Especially, they say that, you know, one more big earthquake from Fukushima, and it's really going to put that thing at risk for a lot of people. So I had a little list here. If you want, I'll just read through it kind of quickly, and there are things on my list that I've come up with. Okay, so. And there are a whole lot more. So I wanted to welcome anybody in the comments of this show. I'm going to be keeping my eye on the comments for anybody that has any other ideas that they want to add to this list, because, you know, this is helping a lot of people that are going to be following this same path of that they need to go somewhere. Yeah, they'd rather be in A, B, C, or D places. So, yeah, I think it's time to go. So, okay. And like they say, you know, we're part of the wave of people that's able to get out with a shipping container. Lucky us. You know, otherwise, if things get really bad, you're going to be leaving with suitcases. So, you know, it's, you know, wondering how you're going to pay for shipping for, oh, that really cool thing that you could get so easily back in the States. Okay, so water filtration. We're going to take our Berkey filter. There are also different kinds of filtration systems you want to know about for catching storm water. So maybe there is some hose bibs or something to be able to take a plastic container and, you know, do the plumbing on it. I'm sure all these basic plumbing things you could find down in Panama. But we're taking our Berkey filter for sure, and we get ours from theberkeyguy.com, who's the original creator of it.
How do you spell Berkey? Like
B-E-R-K-E-Y. Yep.
Okay.
And then, you know, there's the whole idea of electric. You know, I've been going to the secondhand stores and buying up all the hand tools, like hand drills. I built a whole straw bale house out off grid in southern Utah with just a hand drill and a chainsaw and our trowels that we used for, you know, doing a straw bale house. So I've been collecting trowels because, you know, have a trowel, you have a willing volunteer stuccoing, and stuccoing is the hardest thing, and it'll wreck your wrists if you try to do it all yourself. Somebody mentioned tools for butchering. You know, there's these little slings for rabbit feet. You know, it's, you know, there's just different things for that. And I don't know. I've actually put that question out to one of my chef friends, you know, for processing meat. Textiles for clothing, maybe you want to take a loom or something. I'm taking a serger sewing machine to maybe I could help someone start a business down there, one of the senoras or something, just because I have it and I can't get the value out of it here. Medical supplies, you know, you want to take a full, you want to figure out what all your medical supplies are. And there's this guy that has a podcast, and he's one of the, if you look up herbal medic or herbal medicine, or he has a camp down in Texas that teaches you all about survival skills and being an herbal medic. His name's not coming to me, but he was an herbal medic in the military. And so he saw a lot of things, and he's one of the only people that does that kind of training. And so there are certain herbs you want to be taking with you in tincture form or in oil form or something like that. A lot of these kind of things you can take down there in that form. A lot of supposedly seeds. I've written the government to try to get an importer license for seeds as a landscaper. I'm not sure how to go about that. And I realize how slow their government is when I emailed about 8 people last week and I still haven't gotten a response. So, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, if you take down a food supply, which we've got our food supply. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you can put in as seeds or as food or whatever that will be part of your future farm. So food storage, again, stuff that you could eat or grow is really important.
Okay, I forgot. How big of a place are you looking for? Like 5 acres or 10 acres or 100 acres? Or
I'm looking more toward 100 acres just because sometimes when you can get a bigger piece of land, you can get that stream going through it, or you can get that mountainside with maybe a little bit of valley or something like that. So because we're going to be going in with other people, there's a potential for more investment in it. But I could start with 5 acres. I could start with 2 acres if I had to. But what I want to be able to do is have the tools to form a company that can do these permaculture installation on anyone and everyone's piece of property. If I have my tree transplanter and my key line plow, we can set up a food forest or a coffee orchard or you know, a whole, the whole thing behind permaculture is that you do a polycultural stack system. So you'd have your coffee trees under your fruit trees, under your nut trees, and then all of your medicinal herbs underneath, and all of your annuals down the rows in between these belts of food forests that are grown on contour. And you know, or around the perimeter of certain paddocks where you have your animals in one paddock 1 week and the next paddock, and they don't go back to that next paddock until until it's due. And that's another body of science that permaculture has adopted called holistic grazing management or paddock shift system or mob grazing. But the holistic management system really helps you identify any problem and learn the criteria in which you can solve it based on what they call a scale of permanence, which is looking at a piece of property and saying, what are my elements that I permanently, you know, kind of can or can't change? And what's that scale of permanence? Like, I can change the soil. I can't change certain things of the contour. I can't change, you know, where am I going to put my hard structures, the houses, where are they already? So really want to put a shout out there for people to pick up a holistic management book and at least just have it. And then the holistic grazing management is how to move your animals along a landscape that actually repair the land. You know, humans can be a tremendous reparative force, regenerative force on the planet if we learn really good design and management strategies. Like I always say, if we could just teach best practices, if we could make laws that would be passed that if there's a better practice, you have to use it. Like if there's a better practice than pesticides or a better product than you know, 2,4-D or Roundup, then you have to use it. You have to.
Americans think that we have that in place. I think that's the biggest part of the problem is we have this blind trust in our government that they're making those best decisions. And obviously, if there was a bet, you know, if it wasn't safe, the government wouldn't. I think that's kind of what the problem is.
Well, the solution is for people to find out what that is and then start to educate their local people. The biggest target that people should be preaching to are the lawmakers. At your local level, at your town level, at your state level, the best thing that anybody who has half a mind for design, for really intelligent design, or that could bring some of these permaculture principles into the light, would be showing up at every town meeting, and they would be bringing those design skills into planning and talking to, you know, there's no reason why we need to be still dumping stormwater mixed with black water, which is the poop, mixed with your shower and everything, and then treating it with chlorine and dumping it into the Flathead River, which is what Polson City does, you know, on top of spraying all their grasses and not planting anything but male trees because they don't want the mess of fruit. And so you get a tremendous amount of pollens being released every spring, and people are miserable living in this town. So, you know, maybe someday they'll hire someone else to be the manager of the park services and something like that'll change. But I'm leaving, and I don't want to deal with my little local government, which is so corrupt on so many levels that we're only hoping for the best. People are getting weeded out, and, you know, let there be a word to the wise that it's time for people who know better or think better or feel better or love more to be calling out people on their less than best practices management and stop preaching to the choir. And start writing letters. I mean, I had one of the senators thank me for talking to them about key line and pinning dead trees along contour in the forest so that they could start capturing the storm waters and, you know, and planting trees other than pine trees to be able to stabilize the mountainsides, you know, with all this beetle kill. We have a whole opportunity to do amazing polycultural food forestry that will feed so many deer that will feed us in times of trouble.
Well, you know, I have to say, Kelly, I have always found anytime I have written any congressman in the United States, but especially our Montana representatives, they have been open. They have written me back and said they appreciate the feedback. And I do find more often than not, if they have a good idea and you agree with them, they need to hear you more because they're out there alone. And even if they agree with you, they're going to struggle to get it through if they don't have public support. Public support is what moves things in our country. And I know people tell me, I don't want to vote. It's a waste of my vote. It's a waste of my time. I'm not going to do anything. But as Americans, we can't be complacent. As Americans, we have a bigger voice.
Well, we're supposed to be built on a representative government. And how can anybody represent you if you're not telling them what you want? And right. I think voting is like, it's really important maybe on a local level, but on a national level, they're so bought and paid for. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. I mean, it's just crazy. It's just so insane. But what we need to be doing is putting pressure on our local state representatives, our local representatives that are taking this stuff to state, that we need anti-corruption laws. We need to put corporations back in place. We need to have a ban laws in the state of Montana for like practices like geoengineering and cloud seeding and all this spraying that is not allowed over Montana. I mean, people need to rise up and say enough because they are killing us. And I wouldn't be moving if my son couldn't be here. I wouldn't be moving if it wasn't so toxic here for the next generation. I just feel like it's I'm leaving my mom, my dad, my sister, my brother, my aunt. I was almost ready to leave my dogs. I'm leaving my college student, and you know, hopefully she'll get done with this thing and hurry and get down with me and help me build the retreat. But you know, I'm concerned, and everybody needs to really start, you know, selling off all the stuff they don't use, investing in things that can help, you know, make sure that their needs are met for clothing, shelter, food, water, backup systems, you know, become as resilient as you can because hold on, the rough seas are coming and, you know, pick your spot, pick your nest. And we're picking our nest up and putting it in a 41 foot shipping container and finding a different tree. So, that's part of the list.
The other thing I got to say on a positive note is I sure am hopeful about these millennials, these kids that are coming up, I feel like they're really socially conscious, environmentally conscious. They want to do the right thing. And they seem to be the biggest entrepreneurs out there. So hopefully they'll be doing a better job.
Yeah.
We're handing them a tough go. But I'm always hopeful. I'm kind of an eternal optimist.
That's good. That's good. And the fact that you brought up the kids, they are the ones that not only are going to turn it around, but they have to, because they're the ones inheriting it. But I see
them doing more than most I've seen in years. I've seen a lot of people in my podcasting group, especially, I have to say, are super conscious about
We were joking
doing
about
the right
how-
thing.
Yeah, we were joking earlier about how our kids could start this online training for Minecraft and how I said, well, really, their ability to create things, and it's kind of interesting that Minecraft is all built on contour. So these guys are being trained to see everything on contour. And Matt Powers is a really good guy in this movement, a friend of mine. He's out in Sebastopol, California. He's doing this book called The Permaculture School, and it's all this training for middle school and high school. And there's the book, and the workbook just came out in Kickstarter, and it's downloadable, and I'm going to take this down there with me as an education curriculum. Permi Kids is another permaculture curriculum for younger kids, for homeschooling or people on any level, but focusing more on younger kids. But the older kids, these workbooks, they have how to build a rocket mass heater, how to build a wood gasifier chamber, how to build a biochar pyrolyzer. And that's another thing I would take down, a pyrolyzer cone you can get from a place out of Coeur d'Alene, $100 to build, $120 shipped. And you have a cone that you can be burning all of your wood waste in to make biochar for your garden. And if anybody doesn't know the benefits of biochar, it is phenomenal. I just started a seed bed for, that bed that I said, like my nursery bed. And I got some pawpaws. And pawpaws are very hard to grow here. And I have been able to keep them alive, putting them in my biochar bed, my biochar pit that I mixed in with a bunch of acidic soils. Wood chips, or not wood chips, but the stuff that comes off the pine trees and stuff like that. I'm very impressed with biochar, and I had huge fires going with all the wood that they throw in the dump from the beehive factory. And I got a truckload of it, and I started burning it. And I thought, gosh, I sure would like a cone that I could contain my fire in, because I was like spraying the trees, and it's just going, whew, I got a little bit too big on that one. But it's fun. It's fun to learn how to pyrolyze. And that's basically you top light a pile of wood, kind of like a pyramid. You top light it, and as it burns down, it'll get this big flame. But as it starts to make stuff in the charcoal, when that starts turning white, you want to pull it out and douse it and just keep pulling it out and just let the middle stuff keep burning. And then you created biochar, you bang it up, you stomp on it, you crush it. And then you can inoculate it with these mycorrhizes that you can get easily off of Amazon, or you can buy them at some of your stores for growing. And then you put that in all your beds, and when your roots find that, and it'll last for beneficial bacteria and fungi for thousands of years in your soil. It's like sequestering charcoal. It's like sequestering carbon into your soil. And so anytime anybody has a fire, don't let it turn to ash. Just keep pulling out those coals and throwing it into your garden, and it'll work its way down.
Oh, that's interesting.
So for power too, it's like, well, do I order a windmill and take a little windmill down? I have a friend that installs windmills. That all that kind of stuff is kind of funky and out there, but really you want to think about that. Maybe something for hydroelectric. Maybe there's some sort of a ram pump that you want to bring with you, like that you could find something used for hydroelectric here and bring it with you in your shipping container. I was laughing that we should bring a lot of egg cartons, because, these are things that all you might be a tool that is just a throwaway here, basically, or recycling, and you'd have to go buy it down there.
Do you have to pay for your container by weight or space, or?
I don't know about the weight, but because a lot of the stuff we're taking are bed mattresses and furniture, and we're basically taking are useful things in the house. Like we were debating, well, should we take our sofas? It's like, well, then we don't have to buy sofas down there. So, you know, if we've got it, we've got great kitchen stuff and supplies. And so we'll just basically take our house basics. I might just take the mattresses and leave the frames or something and, you know, just build up off the ground or something for that. So I don't know. I'm just trying to, they say that the lumber's kind of expensive down there.
Kelly, I got to know, have you been to Panama yet?
let's see. I stopped there on an air flight one time. No, I went to Costa Rica. I had this fabulous idea that instead of just going down the street to Ronan to get a surgery that my husband needed for his wrist, we should go do the whole international surgery thing that was a lot cheaper down there, and it would pay for us to have a month vacation, right? Down, you know, hanging out on the beach, recovering. And I'd only been to Hawaii at that point. I didn't know what the tropics was. I thought it, you know, palm trees. And we get there, and the word sweltering is something that I had a firsthand experience of. And all the time you're trying to get out of the heat one way or another, you're trying to get out into the ocean, a pool, a shower, or an air conditioner. And my poor husband, because I'd booked all these places to go, you know, have some R&R after the surgery. And he swelled up so bad that we think that he did permanent nerve damage from being down at the beach. And so we, at one point, his swelling was bad, and we were like, we got to get out of this heat. So we went up into the cloud forest at about 4,000 feet or more, and we loved it. We felt like it was the first time, like we felt our skin was just drinking in this perfect air, and there were fireflies. And of course, being a girl of the Northern Rockies, fireflies are totally mystical. I love them. And there were very few bugs, and it was just seemed like the perfect climate. And so I've just seen pictures of this place, Boquete. My husband's going to do a reconnaissance trip to make sure that this is exactly what we want to do. We already have a house picked out. We've really connected with a lot of people online that help with relocation services. You know, looking at pictures of this place, it's just beautiful. And everybody says, you know, people with respiratory issues, they come there, they don't have any allergies. And I just literally, I walk around my house thinking, oh my gosh, I have the most perfect house. It was a 6-bedroom historical home, perfect for our massage and chiropractic offices. And we had bedrooms upstairs, and we never had a problem with people walking into our house. I'm on a beautiful double lot right down the street from the schools, right across from the lake, you know, block from the lake. And it was the perfect place. I walk into my yard and my fruit trees are all producing. I must have 60 fruit trees in this place. And I just have this beautiful permaculture garden everywhere. And I've got the, you know, because I put it on Airbnb. Yeah, if you look up Polson, Montana Gardens Wellness Center on Airbnb, then you can see pictures of my place. And, you know, if anybody wants to take it over for a fabulous home office or wellness clinic, then we've got several people lined up that want to live here, but they're trying to get financing to be able to buy it. So that's kind of hard. But anyways.
And how many kids do you guys have?
We have two boys that are 8 and 10, and the one has been so sick that he's had to stay all summer in Florida with his aunt. So he's going to be coming home here in a few weeks, and we're keeping our fingers crossed that he's put in enough healing time down at the ocean that he won't be so bad as we get ready to do our last final packing. So the other thing, let me just go back on my list here. So something for hot water. Somebody was saying, oh, there's like a $250 instantaneous hot water heater for outdoor camps or whatever on Amazon. I thought, oh, $250 for, you know, knowing I'm going to have a hot shower, which they say one of the things down there that is not common is a hot shower. So that would be kind of nice to know that out at my camp. I always think of what I'm going to take to set up this camp. You know, back in the day when I was a cute little granola girl, I went to, you know, Rainbow Gathering, and you just see how they erect these amazing kitchens and shower systems and water systems. That's another thing I think, well, what kind of tubing? They probably have pretty inexpensive poly tubing, but probably not as inexpensive as we have it here. So can I throw in some poly weaving? Can I throw in my sprinkler system for my drip tape that I've got? Make sure that I've got stuff for irrigation, you know, for basic water movement if I need it. So, you know, catching rain and moving water around your property where you want to is a real asset. Then I look at, you know, taking my dehydrator down there because it's humid. It's very hard to get stuff dry down there. Willie Smith's great guy, does a TED talk about Borneo, highly recommended. Please watch the talk. Willie came over to one of Paul Wheaton's rocket mass heater workshops because he wants to know how to install rocket mass heaters in order to have a drying room, because that's one of their biggest problems is things don't dry down there. He's in Indonesia, in Borneo. Oh. So then another thing people say is even though you don't need food storage, you never know when you might want food storage or whatever. And so to take your canning supplies, they say that your glass jars are really expensive down there, and you can pick those up at yard sales here all the time. For the whole thing about organic mushroom production, it would be great down there, but you need to have certain things like your sterilization equipment. So a pressure cooker canner would be really important for that. And you can look up tools needed for mushroom production, and that is going to be a great income for somebody, because all the restaurants, you have to think of what do restaurants need that I could sell, and there's your income to keep buying your trees and your rare lost crops of the Andes, and all of your species collection can be funded by what your restaurants need. And you know, a lot of people, for the social reasons, they're going to be going to these restaurants, and all these chefs going down there, especially all these American chefs, they're loving it because the food that comes in, even though they can't quite count on the supply at this point for being really consistent, it's all organic. And there are American starting farms down there to try to make sure that people get organic stuff. In this town alone, there's a Tuesday market that everybody goes to, and that's where you do a lot of your bartering and your gathering. And yeah, the American community is huge down there. The other thing down in this area, there are five rivers, and so there's river rafting, and we've got a couple rafts we thought about selling, and I'm like, well, you know, we really couldn't get the value out of them, especially in the condition I left them. They're all stinky dirty, but you know, we're thinking about taking those down because we could go river rafting with the kids. You know, fun, adventurous type things are really going to need. We've got some pulley systems, and you can go to Sportsman's Warehouse to get these, you know, these zip line things. You know, it's like, well, do we want to take some equipment for a zip line? We could start a little zip line thing. And then there's some fly fishing. You know, somebody says, take my boat down there and I'll let you have it if I can come down and stay with you and go boating and fly and fishing in the ocean. You can't take guns down there until you become a citizen or resident, which takes about 4 months if you do all your things right, and you can buy guns and ammo down there. So we can't take it, but at Snappy's, they have supposedly a pellet gun, which you could take, an air pellet gun that they said, you know, penetrated about a half inch of wood the other day that they tried out. There's really powerful pellet guns, and that could also be good in your home defense. Because thievery is big and people break into houses often, I don't know how often, but you want to have a security system. So you want to have your motion detection systems that you can put on your fencing and all around your perimeters. And, you know, it could go to your phone. Most American phones don't work down there, but you can get phones down there that work with your Skype. So people might call your number through Skype and that sort of thing. So you don't have to worry about your phone. Don't get a fancy phone before you leave. So basic things for housing.
So wait, how do you have a computer, like Wi-Fi, like DSL, internet? I mean, how are you going to do Skype?
Well, they down in town, they have the internet. And one of our reasons for going is to strengthen our family bonds. And we have two kids that we do not want to raise in America. Granted, what they're exposed to through the TV or the internet or phones or other people's phones or whatever. So just the amount that my kids have been addicted to their gaming, which we don't let them do violent games. You know, they've gone through their Minecraft and all these other kind of things. But we really see the addiction happening and how that determines kind of who they are. And they're turning into little droids or Borg droids. And so I don't want to lose my kids. And so, you know, while we'll let them take their tablets down or something like that, we won't have Wi-Fi in the house We won't have internet at the house. So if any of us want to go do our work or do that, we have to also go be social with someone at a cafe or at the new library. They just built a beautiful new library. That's another big thing. Reason why I want to take a shipping container is I've got $10,000 worth of books. And they did open this new library. And I'm sure they say that American English reading is hard to get down there. So, you know, we'll save aside our quality books and we'll be packing those in the shipping container too. I'm really excited to actually be able to use my books for education. I want to go down there and be known as La Maestra Kelly, the teacher. I want to be just a teacher. I even got old enough to have to need glasses. then there's all this cool stuff. If you look up on Pinterest, you can come up with great ideas. Like, we looked up solar lighting and outdoor showers. And so we kept, oh, my son, I got him so excited. I said, honey, just look at outdoor showers. And so all my kids are excited on building these outdoor showers, which will be part of the retreat center, right? Part of the exciting thing to come there. Then there's these glow stones that you can get, these stones that you can put on the walkways and they glow. And that's exciting. Or the cord lighting or glow in the dark paint. You know, that never occurred to me to buy glow in the dark paint, but you can paint these rocks for, you know, for the walkways. So you can see that Fur de Lance snake.
They charge all day in the sun. And then when the sun goes down, they're all charged.
Yeah. And so you have, or, you know, what about the little solar lights that, you know, maybe those
that
are
never worked here in Montana because the night is so long and they freeze when on the, you know, the days you need them the most, it's so cold, you know, in the summer, the days are so long, you don't need them when it's warm.
Yeah. And then you hit
winter,
them
with you
the
gotta
shovel.
Bring them in because they're frozen. So
well, that's the other
I've spent more than my fair share trying to get those things to work.
I've destroyed so many with my snow shovel. And and the exciting thing down there, which is like totally a paradigm shift for me, is it's 7 to 7 night and day every single day of the year. It doesn't have longer days and nights. So you get that nighttime social feeling. Like, so you want to put out your Christmas lights outside and create this outdoor nice evening environment in the dark. So you might think about your solar lighting ideas.
You know, I saw the nicest thing on the 4th of July was somebody had created this little outdoor Christmas light kind of thing on their porch with chairs and everything. That was just I don't know. There was just something about the way they had done it on the 4th of July. It was the sweetest little thing I saw.
Yeah. You know, just going to Pinterest, you can get so many ideas of what you would want to take. I mean, then we started getting really fancy, like, oh, I've got to get the climbing wall over the swimming pool. No, just kidding. You get ideas of what you want to build. And then you're like, well, maybe I should take some climbing wall fixtures down with me. I know those would be more expensive in Panama. There is good climbing there. So I want to go to the secondhand store and get some new climbing shoes. I mean, old climbing shoes, because there's
new
climbing right out of town. I think that climbing is really good for kids. It helps them climb over their brain, you know. Mm-hmm. Then there's the whole thing.
There's
a lot
of things to climbing that people don't realize when you think of it at the face.
Yeah.
I think it's, I don't know. I only tried it once, but it was a lot easier than I ever thought it would be. Like the fact that I could do it and make it and up a fairly tall wall just shocked me. I never thought, you know, I would barely make it off the ground. I mean, granted, you know, I was in college. It was 25 years ago, but.
Yeah, sure.
And laying down for someone who was scared to death of heights, that was way fun too. That did not scare me at all.
Yeah,
I
think that climbing, you know, they talk about self-esteem builders, and I think that definitely is one that helps you really see that you're not as limited as you think you are.
Mm-hmm. Kind of the strange thing about it was all the climbers are like, "Nah, I'm not out here to be in the woods. I just like the feel of conquering a mountain." And that part didn't hit me too well. That could have been the people I was with, but.
Yeah, well, you know, for girls like us, the mountain conquers us. So it's always that downhill that gets me. So the
me
other
too.
Thing too is, you know, beehives. Are there any kind of bee equipment that maybe we would be better off having here? So I wanted to pose that question to Michael Jordan, the Bee Whisperer. And before this interview, I wanted to do that and I didn't get around to it, but I will be putting this same question hopefully out on a forum, either at Permies or hopefully Jack will take this on. I've wanted to ask Jeff Lawton, the international permaculture school guru himself, what he would do, because he takes people through a 10-week training where each week they're in charge of doing one thing. Like they're taking care of the animals 1 week, and then they're taking care of the solar system 1 week, and then they're taking care of the kitchen system 1 week, and they're able to see the entire thing. These guys feed from their farm over 100,000 meals a year just on having a completely closed loop sustainable system. So I wanted to pose him the question, even though he's from Australia, what does he know of our products in America that you can get here and put in a container with you that might be less expensive to get?
Cool. Well, I'd be surprised if he doesn't answer you.
Right. Well, talking to Jack.
Plus,
more
it'll be a challenge for him.
Yeah. And then asking Jack, what do I need for the ducks? Because if you watch the Duck Chronicles, there are certain amounts of like PVC things that he makes for these watering systems so that your ducks don't get poop in them. You know, there are a lot of like little innovations. There's another website that I really wanted to put in my container, some of these things, and it's called Open Source Ecology. And it's people who are sharing all the plans for building these interlinking things. Like there's this hopper that can use the dirt from right underneath your feet to build a whole community by pressing these bricks together. And I thought, wow, that's a $10,000 machine. Would it be better to, you know, it'd be better to do that, to get that machine, than even to get these earth bags, because then you take out the human, a lot of that human struggle to tamp and fill bags all day long. But, you know, I think it's all a good idea. There we go. So if you can afford to get the $10,000 hopper, or they say it's $3,000 if you build it yourself off of the plans that they give you on Open Source Ecology versus the $10,000 if you buy it from them already built. But it's still a great idea.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, as far as where I've gotten on my list, there are some tools that a friend of mine told me I need for doing post and beam. So certain amounts of chisels and things to be able to do post and beam work is important. We have a lot of the different screws and bolts that my husband had from his days on rigging and Hollywood movies that he brought with me. Like he almost sold the crimper and everything to be able to put wires up, guy wires up places. And I said, hey, those guy wires are going to have to hold my shade screen. I said, don't get rid of those, because, you know, $40 at a yard sale, you sell the whole kit. And, you know, that's what's going to keep me from burning in that tropical sun.
Right.
So the place where I'm going is always 60, between 60 and 80 degrees. But at 60 degrees and rainy, it's pretty cold. Mm-hmm. So I'll be taking some kind of warm clothes. Mm-hmm. And then at 80 degrees, it's hot and sunny, or at that level of sunshine, the sun is really strong. So I went down to the secondhand store and bought a bunch of cotton long sleeve collar shirts. And I wear those anyway when I farm here, but all of mine were well used and dirty, so I thought I'd get myself a whole brand new set for Panama.
There you go. Wow.
That's as far as I've gotten.
Well, it sounds like a lot. It sounds like you really thought this out, and you are like have done a ton of research, and just you're ready. What an adventure!
Yeah, y'all come down to the Montana Winter Retreat down in northern Panama.
All right. I think we're going to leave it there, Kelly.
Okay. That was a pretty darn complete package of what to have in your shipping container wherever you decide to let it be sent. Okay. I like how Jack Spirko says, he goes, everybody needs to go pick their own part of the beach. Uh-huh. And it's kind of like we come to a time where we all really need to organize with people around us that we like, we want to do something with them and, you know, get these things going and up in systems. And really you can do a lot of this with not a lot of import. Like Joel Salatin says, you know, don't worry about buying a bunch of land, lease it first, but buy the systems that are all transportable from one farm to the next, your irrigation systems, your shade for your animals, your watering, your fencing, it's all transportable. So that's kind of what I'm doing, is I'm investing in the system that can go anywhere.
And then you're going to train a whole new group of people, stewards of the earth.
Well, and thanks to you and your program, Jackie, we just did.
Cool. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening. Have a great day.